From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Iris Chang was a brilliant and courageous author. In 1997, she published her second book, The Rape of Nanking, The Forgotten Holocaust of World War II, which brought to light the brutal massacre of hundreds of thousands of Chinese by the invading Japanese army in 1937. Iris Chang took her own life in 2004, for reasons we'll never fully understand. Iris's mother, Yingying Chang, has written a beautiful memoir of her daughter called The Woman Who Could Not Forget. Much of the book is in Iris Chang's own words from letters and emails that she wrote to her mother. Yingying Chang, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you.
You know, when I first heard the shocking news of Iris Chang's death, my first thought was that it must have something to do with her book, The Rape of Nanking. And when we hear about a young person's suicide, we think, well, it must have occurred at the end of a life that was difficult and full of depression and mental anguish. But upon reading your book, The Woman Who Could Not Forget, I discovered that these things weren't true. I mean, her death was not likely connected to her book, The Rape of Nanking, and she had not suffered a life of depression. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what I want to express in my opinion, because, you know, after she died, so many media speculate and said the Rape of Nanking, the book she wrote in 1997, maybe is the cause of her death, of her suicide. Actually, my husband and I discussed this a long time, and we all agree we don't think the book is really the cause of her suicide. And that's what I wrote this in the last two chapters, very detailed what happened to her at the end of her life, the 3 months actually, and the epilogue of the analysis of her death. And I really conclude that because I'm the one really take care of her the last half years, so I really know what happened. So I concluded that I think it's the medicine, you know, the doctor prescribed, you know, the antidepressants and the antipsychotic drugs. And the side effect of those drugs has a big impact on her.
So really, up until those last 3 months of her life, she was perfectly fine.
Yeah, well, I shouldn't say she's a perfect fine. Is she didn't have a mental illness as some you know, book or media imply, and she was you know, was doing her research on the fourth book. The last book is on a Bataan death march. And that book is about a group of POW, U.S. POW stationed in Philippines in the 1940s and trapped and, you know, was conquered by Japanese Imperial Army. That story, okay, is very sad because all those people were starving, tortured by Japanese army. And then there's some survivors, and they all lived in the Midwest state, like Kentucky, Ohio, Illinois, or Wisconsin. So Iris was arranged those survivors to going to interview them. So this is a sad project, I agree. But this will affect her mental emotion, you know, that's for sure. But my husband and I also still don't think it's the direct trigger of her death. And I forgot what I'm going to say. You think, you know, so I don't think this all direct. So the last half year, not only what happened to her, it's not only she was very busy in doing research of the fourth book. She was, before she broke down in Louisville, Kentucky, in August 2004, before she went to that trip, for several days, she was didn't sleep well and ate well either. So one thing I said I described to you is because the book, she was preparing interview those survivors in the Midwest state. But another thing happening is very unfortunately, at that time she discovered her son, Christopher, has some symptom of autism. And she was doing a lot of research on autism too. So that's why I think the first is the physical fatigue, exhausting before she went to the Louisville, Kentucky. And then so she broke down. And then later on, the doctor gave her some antipsychotic drugs. And later on, after she returned home, she saw three doctors. I have detailed all those events, you know, in my book. But anyway, all I want to say is later on, the doctor prescribed antidepressants. And actually, I have to say, make her worse, not better. And at the time, I didn't know that. All I, you know, after she died, and because I'm a biochemist, I tried to investigate a little. And I realized those antidepressants has a tremendous, dangerous side effect, can give people, the patient, some ideation or preoccupation of suicide thoughts. So because Iris's behavior was completely different after she took those antidepressants. And also, I found out that there's a number of books now published describe this. For example, Dr. Peter Brinken, and there's Allison Bass, and there's Robert Taker. I mean, there's a number of books, so I realized something.
These are books about the effects of these drugs.
Yes, those are, for example, in the Peter Brinken's book, like Toxic Psychology, and they, he gave so many examples, actually, in her, his hands. He handled, because make testimonies in the court for behavior of those victims, and he present a number of cases. Those antidepressants, this group called the SSRI, depressant has some, you know, dangerous side effect to make you have this suicidal thoughts and actually very violent behavior in the initial phase and also withdrawal phase. So you have to be very careful. So this is all new to us because at the time, I know Iris was taking antidepressant called Celexin. And on the bottle, there's a black label they call the warning, said that this has a side effect of a suicide thought. But this is only for children and young adults. So I thought Iris is 36 years old. So I although I was feel very very uneasy about it, but I thought she's older, you know. But it turns out after she died, I did some research. I actually went to Boston to Harvard Medical School because I graduated from there, and I went there for some other business, and I visiting Dr. Martin Tetcher. He is the psychiatrist at Harvard Medical School. He is the almost the first, one of the first ones in 1990s to publish a number of papers and warn the field of psychiatrists that, you know, there's a very dangerous side effect of those antidepressants. And so that's how I find out. And he gave me a lot of books to read, you know, missing like Allison Bass's book, The Side Effect. So when I came home, I read this book and I realized a lot of things. That's how when I wrote my memoir, I gave my opinion in the conclusion, the last two or three chapters.
Well, Dr. Chang, writing your book, The Woman Who Could Not Forget, biography of your daughter, Iris Chang, it must have been a really heartbreaking experience in some ways. What drove you to write it? Did you, I mean, the as you mentioned, the chapters on her death take up a very small portion of the book, and her rich life takes up by far, 95% of the book. So what was it that drove you to write the book?
Yes. I'm glad you asked this question. Actually, a lot of people said, is that very painful? Yes, of course, it is painful. But, Iris's life is not her death. And as I described, this is only a very small part of her life. Actually, 95% or more, her life is very exciting, actually. I feel very inspiring. The reason I want to write this book is because although she was a public figure, but few people really know her because she's a very private person. And she and us, me and her dad are very close. We are a very close family. She wrote numerous letters, emails to us, and also she called us constantly. We talk about over the phone very much. So there's so rich thoughts on her another part of life. I want to share this with the world. Another reason, of course, is because her son Christopher, when he died, he only 2 years old. He will never know his mother. So I thought this is my duty. I should write a true life of Iris, really for Christopher. So another thing, of course, I want to straight the things out. And during the writing, I sorted out all her emails and the letters to us. And I read all those again and again, and also her speeches. And it really inspired me so much. And actually, I tell you, it is really a driving force behind me to finish this book. Because all those sentences she wrote, very encouraging, and her determination, her conviction, I feel I have to write this book to expose her thoughts to the world.
Well, she really has an inspiring life. I mean, from the time she was a very small child, she was driven. She was intelligent. You say in your book that you couldn't stop her from talking, and unless you were going to take a nap, you'd say, please stop talking.
Yes.
When did she... I know that in the book you talk about her really getting into writing as a creative writer. She wrote poetry and fiction.
Yes.
So when did she sort of switch to become a historian?
Well, actually, she really wanted to become a writer. I don't know is because you have to know a little background, because my husband is a physicist. I'm a biochemist. So at the beginning, she saw that we wanted her to become a scientist. So when she was attending the college at the University of Illinois, her major is mathematics and computer science. But she really loved writing. That's what we all know. But she always, so she took not only math and computer science courses, she also took literary courses. But in her junior year, she realized her true love, her passion is reading and writing. So she wanted to switch to literature and finally in journalism. And actually, we encourage her to do so because we told her if one really loves a subject, then she or he can succeed in that field. So you got to have to love that subject. So she was very relieved, and then she really grateful for us. And later on in her years, she told us she thanks us for letting her follow her dream and follow her career path, let her decide her career. And so she transferred to journalism and graduated and then got a job in Chicago, first in Associated Press and then Chicago Tribune. As I wrote in my book, and that's very short because that's internship. And finally, Chicago Tribune didn't hire her. Actually, I think later on, Iris told us this is the best, actually, to her career. So she really decided she wanted to go to the writing rather than go to in the newspaper or media. So she went to apply for a scholarship, and then she got it in the Johns Hopkins. And in the Johns Hopkins, because of her science program, she started as a nonfiction. She liked to write nonfiction. And her teacher is Barbara Carleton. And, you know, Barbara Carleton is the editor of Science and Nature. And at the time, she also taught Johns Hopkins. And she knew a editor called Barbara Rabler. Susan Rabler. And Susan Rabler is the editor of Harper and Column, the publisher. She's looking for a writer for a biography of a Chinese rocket scientist called Dr. Chen Xuesen. And, and then Barbara saw that Iris is a good candidate. So actually, the first book, The Threat of Shockworm, is, you know, is not her idea. It's the Harper Column, Susan Rabler's idea, and then commissioned her, to do it. And that's how she started off writing, you know, the book, starting like this. The Threat of Shockworm is a nonfiction, of course, it's a biography. So, and then the second book is her own idea.
Well, you know, I want you to tell us a little bit about how she came to write The Rape of Nanking. I mean, I know that she had, in your book, you tell us about some of her wonderful book ideas. It was a shame, really, that she didn't get a chance to write all those great books that she had inside her. But tell us, how did she come to this fantastic book, which has really changed history, that book?
Right. Okay. I wanted to say first is that The Rape of Nanking is not an accident. It is really accumulation of many years of, I think it's a Chinese, our family background or her Chinese background. Because when she was like 9 or 10 years old, she already very curious about her roots. She asked us over the dinner table why, you know, we have to come to this country, why we don't stay in China. So we have to tell her our parents, you know, her grandparents' history and our family background, our family history. And then we told her about, the Sino-Japanese War in the 1930s. That's how my parents went through. And then later on, of course, the Civil War between the Nationalists and the Communists. So then this is like a day-by-day kind of question-answer, and she realized her own roots. And I said that she was very curious about her own background. And then later on, when she was in the college, and of course, I said already interested in writing. And then after she finished the first book, and she was accidentally, knowing and there's photo exhibition in Cupertino, California, about the Rape of Nanking. You know, this is a very interesting. She just finished her first book, The Threat of Shockworm, and then she's looking for a topic. And then the people tell her there's exhibition, the photo exhibition in Cupertino, about the Rape of Nanking. And then suddenly she remembered when she was little, and also later on when she wrote the first book, we talk about what kind of subject for her next book. And we mentioned the Rape of Nanking because she wanted to write something about the United States or about, you know, in the West. But I remind her, you know, you have bilingual, biculture background, why not write something about Asia, you know, about Chinese? So at the time she lived in Barbara, Santa Barbara. So she drove all the way to Cupertino, California to see the photos, exhibition about the Rape of Nanking. put on by the local activists, human rights activists. So after she saw that photo, so in my book I said the photo changed her life, and she realized how bad the situation, how bad of the Rebellion King. And it's more than she can imagine, more than what we told her. So she decided she wanted to write this book.
And the book made her, personally, incredibly famous. How did she react to suddenly becoming a famous person? She was on television, on the radio, in magazines.
Yes, it is really caught everybody's surprise, because we all thinking, you know, she's a good writer, we know that. But we never thinking that so successful. Yes, and then the book become a New York Times best-selling list on the best-selling list in 1998 for 3 months. I think it's because it's about the time, all our generation, in the 60 years old. So we all eager to let this part of history known to the world. And I think Iris is really a little lucky at time. She just wanted to write a book, and then this is the topic that she's familiar with, and that she wanted to do, understand more. And then that's how she get on this. And I think also the world also interested in this topics in the end of the 1990s. Yeah.
Well, her son, she had a son who was just a little baby at the time of her death, and she was very perceptive in diagnosing him as having a form of autism when he was very young, and then that turned out to be the case. He was officially diagnosed. But just kind of update us a little bit. How are her husband and son, and what are they doing?
Oh, yeah. Christopher was only two when she died. So at the 2004 until 2007, I think they all live, close to us. That's what originally they live very close. And then, I think later on, her husband got married, and then Christopher now moved with his father to the state of Illinois, and now they live in Illinois, central Illinois. But because his father remarried and have another two children, so Christopher was now live with his father's parents, another set of grandparents, also very close to them. So I visited them very sometimes, and actually in recently years, Christopher visiting us twice a year. Every year during the spring break and the summer vacation, he came. He's fine, but although he has autistic symptoms, but fortunately, it's not too serious. As you know, autism has a very wide spectrum. He's belong to the mild side. So, but still, there's symptoms too.
Well, Dr. Chang, your book is called The Woman Who Could Not Forget. Can you tell us how you came up with that title? Why is it called The Woman Who Could Not Forget?
Well, because I think I tried to put in the end, the woman who could forget is because she could forget about the suffering of those victims of the atrocities, and those voiceless victims, and that's why she, because after the book published, she still campaigned for those victims of the atrocities, and she wanted to fight for the justice for them. So I think at the time we're looking for a titles. Actually, the title is really decided by my publisher, and they really feel the woman who could not forget is really the one, to make the whole book looks to express the spirit of what really Iris was.
Well, she was a fabulous and interesting, vibrant, amazing woman, and I want to thank you for writing your book to really, you know, let me in to see what her life was like. And it's really a fabulous book, and I think everyone should read it. The book is called The Woman Who Could Not Forget, and the author, my guest, Yingying Chang. Dr. Chang, thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. The production of From the Bookshelf is aided and abetted by Francis Venegas. Thank you, Francis, for all of your help. And I also want to thank Yingying Chang for being my guest this week. Her book, The Woman Who Could Not Forget. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.